So welcome to episode 123 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, and today we're going to do another round table, the third to date, and I'm joined by Wayne Grant from Florida, USA.
Hello, Martin. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Not at all. Thanks for joining. And we have, again, the second time, Landon Michelson from Washington State in the USA.
Hello again.
Hey, Landon. We have Rick Fanasi in California, USA.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Hey, Rick. It's nice to have you guys on, and thanks for sort of making the time to do this. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to speaking with you all. So, I'm not going to go through all of the topics that we're going to talk about. We've all done a little bit of preparation, but I think we should just jump straight in. And as we volunteered Wayne to go first, do you want to start, Wayne?
We're going to
talk about sports photography.
Sure. So I'm going to start tonight by talking about my sports photography. And basically, I am a freelance sports photographer for a major portrait studio here in the Orlando area. And we cover sports for some of the high schools here. We have contracts with some of the high schools here in Orlando. And some of the work involves in-studio portraits, the standard ones that you see mounted on walls inside people's homes. But also, we go out and we take more active portraits of the students while they participate in various sports, and such as the ones I've been covering since the fall of last year. And some of them are the typical American football and the soccer, or the football as it's known to the rest of the world, and the World Cup, the FIFA World Cup, that typical football, that's what I mean. And other things like indoor volleyball, basketball, wrestling, and the like. So ever since I've started this, it's just been a wonderful experience for me to go out and do these types of shooting events that I hadn't done before. One of the events that I covered back in November was a swimming competition that was statewide in the state of Florida. High schools from all over the state got together here in Orlando and competed for a championship, culminating in an award ceremony that goes to individuals and schools depending on their standings. And that was so exciting. It was amazing. I actually got the chance to photograph next to newspaper photographers and other television people in the same building. And sort of standing, shoulder to shoulder with these bigwigs, covering the same event, and it was exciting. And I even got to go in the same press room with these, bona fide news people, keeping a daily blog of the events. So that's the sort of thing I've been doing, and it's a blast. You know, I just tell my manager that, you don't know how much fun I'm having, and I'm getting paid for this. It's amazing. And speaking of it, getting paid for it, it all started with me photographing my cousin's soccer match. And one of the other family or relatives there asked me how much I charge for my pictures. And I said, well, nothing really. It turns out that this person was a friend of my my cousin, and they all traveled together. So I agreed to just give it to her for free, the pictures from the game. But then I realized, I said to myself, if I can really do this, I can just get into it and make a few bucks on the side. And in fact, that's what we do. I get paid, and the studio gets a contract that allows the schools to use these pictures for things like the yearbook, the school newspaper, and also they upload these shots to the company website, where the students themselves or their friends and family can go on and order prints, sort of a nice exchange. So
that's cool.
Yeah, so that's the sort of background. And so tonight I've decided to share three of the photos from my sports shooting. And I'll just get into the first one. which is of a male swimmer. I've called it men's butterfly. He's actually doing the breaststroke. I think that's the proper term for it. But
Let me just jump in now a moment, Wayne, and I'll explain that what we'll do is I will embed these in the podcast just like we normally do. Mm-hmm. So if people are listening on on an iPod, you'll be able to see the photo that Wayne's talking about right now, and I'll also link them into the show notes and things as well. So you know, the images will be available to take a look at.
Great. So just to continue, what you should be seeing now is a male swimmer who's wearing sort of a water cap and goggles, just propelling himself forward in the water, surrounded by beaded splashes of water all around him. And he's got his mouth wide open, and he's just got this look of, you know, strength and determination on his face. And to get the shot, I knelt down poolside as he was swimming towards me, obviously, and decided to use a low angle or a low perspective in order to sort of give the illusion of being closer to the action. And that's something I've noticed. The lower you get, the more sort of in your face it is and closer the viewer feels to the action. And so just a couple of technical notes for this shot. I used a Canon EOS 40D with a 300mm f4 lens at f4 for 1/640th of a second and ISO 1600 in aperture priority mode with plus 2/3 compensation. And just a bit of post-processing was to do some brightening of the shadow areas in aperture and a bit of sharpening in Photoshop. So this shot, I think, came out pretty well. After Graham, New South Wales, in the forum saw this one, he wanted to send me to Beijing right away to cover the Olympics. Mm. So
it's a really cool shot. Can I just ask a few questions on it while we're at it?
Certainly.
Did you do any cropping at all, or is this as you framed it?
As it's framed. So no cropping done.
Nice.
And a good guide to figure out quickly if something was cropped is to look at the dimensions.
You can hold those though, right?
True,
you can.
True. You're right.
I like the way you've got the. Obviously, it's going to be there anyway, but I like the way you've got the pole or the rope thing that goes through the water to the lane marker.
Yeah, that's
I like
great.
The way that sort of leads out into the back and everything. It all works really well. Nice shot.
Thanks. Yeah, and
that splash over the shoulder is really nice too.
Yeah.
I think that's basically it for this one. And let me see. I can go on to the next one then and sort of summarize some general tips at the end. So the next shot I'd like to show you now is one of a lady diver. So... this should be shown now. A huge contrast, as I put it, between the previous image and this one, where you have a female diver who's sort of gracefully flying upside down through the air above the swimming pool. And I really like this because I was able to catch her in somewhat of perfect athletic form with her feet together and hands spread apart. And I've even caught her eyes wide open, looking straight down at her landing target. And in this one, just to contrast again, what I've done is used a high perspective. And how I did this was to walk up on a set of bleacher stands right above the diving board area so that I can get rid of all the clutter and all the standing crowds around the poolside area. And so if I hadn't done this, I would have gotten a very busy background and resulting in a distraction from the main subject here, which is the diver. So just to contrast again, you can really make use of angles and perspectives, and this is one of the things you've covered, Martin, in you know, some of your early podcasts. And another theme here that you've covered also is panning. To get the shot, I used a great deal of panning with the athlete as she moved up the springboard and down. So
you're panning vertically for this, obviously, as they're falling through the air. So that was what did you? I know that when I've done panning, I've panned across the sky with birds and with moving subjects. But you're panning vertically. Did you find anything difficult about that, or you know, was there anything that you noticed that you had to do differently?
Actually, no. All I had to do was drop the lens.
Yeah.
It felt strange, and yeah, you're right. Normally, panning we think of as moving with an object horizontally, but here it was a relief every time following the diver down just to drop the lens and squeeze the shutter as I did that, and so it worked well for me. And every time it was just you know, the motion that I would take, you know, up with the diver as she propelled herself on the springboard, and then just dropping the lens as while I squeezed the shutter as she descended into the water. So that's how it pretty much worked out. So I caught her sort of just gracefully flying through. And a couple of technical notes about this. Another shot with a 40D here again, this time with a zoom lens, the 70-200 2.8, might have been at 2.8 for 1/500th of a second, and ISO 3200 with plus 1/3 compensation, and just a bit of sharpening in Photoshop. And so one of the things that I should mention also is here, I needed to do some white balance correction. Normally, if it's a daylight situation, you know, I just leave on auto white balance, and that's good enough, but here it was a bit of a tricky situation, even though it was indoors and it was kind of like daylight. I noticed up top, right above the dome, the windows were actually yellowish. And so even though it was sunlight, which would normally be a bit blue, the windows were actually giving a yellow cast. So I actually had to improvise here by setting the camera to tungsten, and that took care of the color cast pretty well. And so,
good tip.
Yeah, thanks. And so this shot, you know, what I like to say here is that I get the typical shots, you know, of the basketball player shooting the ball at the basket, making the basket and scoring and so on. I get some other shots where, you know, the guy is midair with the ball in hand, you know, surrounded by a bunch of defenders and stuff. But once in a while, a shot like this jumps out at you and it becomes something else. And so that's what I thought here. And I've gotten a couple of very kind comments so far in the gallery about this. And what you're seeing here, I should say at the outset, is a basketball player sort of standing in front of or below the net, or the basket rather, with his legs wide apart in a sort of a stance, waiting to see what the ball does. And he's surrounded by a group of defenders as well. And he looks somewhat like a, you know, like a superhero, like a Superman, just standing there with his you know, legs apart, wondering, you know, what's, or almost out to save the day or something. And another thing I liked about this is a bit of a halo above him, as if he's just popping out of the shadows or something. And the American flag there in the background, and a colonial soldier back there as the emblem of their school. And one thing I like about this shot also is if you can get elements in the background to enhance what's happening in the foreground, go ahead and use it. And that's one of the things I try to do a lot when I'm underneath the basket as I shoot. I try to position either the scoreboard that has lighted numbers on them, or elements like this, the American flag or some kind of school icon or emblem in the back, a mascot in the back, to show who they are.
I think it works well with, you know, I like the like you say, with the flag there. It's you've got it out of focus enough to be not too distracting, but it's, you know, it's in focus enough, obviously, to be able to make out what it is. I think you've used it well.
Thank you. And once in a while, you get lucky because, you know, I just have to squeeze the shutter. And once in a while, like I said, you get lucky with shots like this where it all comes together. Let me see. There was something else I was going to say. But yeah, I think that's about it. If it comes to me later, I'll just mention it again. Yeah, right. This is what I was going to say. That ultimately, you know, we hope people will purchase images like this, or it'll end up in some kind of publication, you know. And so what makes it hopefully worth it for someone looking at this picture is that it represents something quintessential. You know, this is like the All-American athlete, you know, this is a picture that this kid or his parents or friends would want to have hanging on the wall to remember him when he moves on with his career, you know, whether that's college basketball or even NBA. You know, a lot of these kids, they hope to move on to the ultimate rewards in their sports careers with contracts and so on in the national sports leagues. So that's just one thing.
That's great. Yeah, have you actually sold this to any of the family or anything, or have they not been made aware of it yet?
Oh, I'm not. I actually don't know because we publish so many of these.
You don't get online to see that side.
No, I don't get to see where most of these end up.
I see.
Yeah, I think I did shoot for one of my cousins once, and she actually brought me the school newspaper and showed me a couple of my pictures that did end up in the newspaper. And I was so ecstatic, you know, I was like, wow, this is great. And, you know, I've saved that copy of the newspaper. But
yeah, sure.
Other than that, if some of my pictures end up in other publications and if people purchase them, I have no way of knowing because they're all on the company's website. You know, if I happen to see one of these shots someday, maybe I'll recognize it and say, oh, wow, that's nice.
That's pretty cool. I've not really done anything where I'm not in control of who actually ends up with it. So that's an interesting concept. I'd never really thought of that.
Yeah.
I know that people shoot for agencies all the time, but that's just sort of, you know, that was a bit of a curveball for me there.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy with the arrangement, you know, because I'm getting fun out of it. And
yeah, sure.
Like I said, I'm learning so much and getting to do a type of photography that I wouldn't normally done.
Well, Wayne, you're getting paid for it. You know, it's not as though you're taking these shots and publishing them and then people just using them for nothing. So
exactly.
You're doing a great job of it.
Thank you. Exactly. All right. So just to sum up the technical notes from this shot, it's with a 5D this time and using an 85 millimeter f1.2 lens at f1.6 for 1/500th of a second at ISO 1600, and just a bit of sharpening in Photoshop. And just another point I want to quickly make about cameras and the setup that I use. I usually go around with two cameras around my my neck and shoulders. One is for you know, far action approaching me, and the other one is when they're right next to me, in this case, under the basket. And I simply just grab the shorter focal length setup, which is normally the 5D with an 85 millimeter lens, to capture close action like this. And for shots that are further away, I use the 40D, sometimes with 70-200 zoom lens, or the 135 millimeter f2.0 lens, depending on how dimly lit the school gymnasium is. And that's one of the things that are typical of this kind of shooting. This is it, basically. I just want to summarize with a couple of pointers for people who are shooting sports and want to get into it. I do get a lot of questions from parents by the court side whenever I'm shooting. People come up to me, and first of all, they ask me, am I shooting for the local paper? That's the typical question I get, and you know, I just have to explain it. And they ask me, "Oh, how can I do it too?" You know, and they also ask me, "Oh, are you selling pictures?" And I just have to, you know, tell them where to go. But they express a lot of interest. Sometimes they show up with their own cameras, and they want to take pictures themselves of their kids. But sometimes, you know, they'd like to know how to be better at it, and so I tell them, you know, what my level is, and you know what I've been doing, and I'm happy to share with them a couple of tips as well. And you know, they're usually nice people. So one of the things that I try to do typically is stay at a high enough shutter speed in order to get the action, you know, frozen, because that's one of the major points. Motion blur and camera motion is, you know, is just not a good thing, and you need a wide enough aperture on your lens, maximum aperture, to get started. And your camera needs to be able to go up to at least ISO 1600 in order to do this, because of the challenges with light. Let me see. I try to move around a lot and use different angles to cover events. And sometimes also with the ball, one of the tips that I was given when I first started this is try to get the ball in the shot. And even though the previous picture that I discussed didn't have the ball there, a couple of people were kind enough to point out that it's still a workable shot, even without the ball, if you get facial expression that tells a story and so on. But the more you can get the ball in the shot, I think it's a more effective sports photo altogether.
I totally agree, but all, in, as well, you know, like, with this shot, the basketball shot, you, everybody's eyes are looking at the ball. You know where it is. We don't really need to see.
True.
It may have added something to the shot, sure, but I don't think it detracts too much not being there. You know, you can tell exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's almost implied. You're right.
Right.
So, I think that's about it. You know, with the equipment that I've got, I've heard you speak very well of this camera that I have, that it's a really good camera for the money, a great piece of kit, as you call it. And it's been working out very well for me. And I've been able to move past just thinking about gear and equipment and stuff, and really find enjoyment in the shots and in this type of photography. And one of the things that I do want to come back to is just the workflow a little bit, just to wrap up here, is that I used to shoot exclusively in RAW mode, and now I've been sort of forced to shoot JPEG and get it right in the camera, as you've always been preaching to us, Martin, you know, try to get it in, right in the camera, so that, you know, you don't have to do the work on the computer later on, you know, just to sort of get lazy about it and say, oh, I'll fix it in Photoshop later. Well, in my case, I've had to do that because of turnaround times, you know, in what I do. So I need to get as much done in the camera, because I shoot in JPEG now for these types of things.
Interesting.
And it's necessary because of the burst rates on the camera are much higher in JPEG mode than if I were to do this in RAW. And can you imagine me trying to process these pictures from RAW and converting them into JPEG to deliver them within a couple of days? You know, it would be impossible almost. So I've just gotten it down to shooting in JPEG, getting the conditions right, and shooting in manual mode, actually. I fix my shutter speed to a certain amount and aperture to a certain amount, and it gets the job done. And let me see. Yeah, I think that was it.
Okay, well, that's great. Does anybody have anything that they want to discuss around this? Any of the other guys?
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure.
On the basketball superhero image, I want to know if you lined up that guy's fingers with the flag on purpose.
Oh,
that is awesome.
Thanks. Hey, that's something I don't know if you're the one that made the comment in the gallery. But yeah, no. It was you. No, it wasn't. Oh, it was someone else. I think Mark. Like I said, pardon?
It is. It's in there. I think it's Rick made that comment this morning. Yeah. It's this evening for you guys. Very fun, and the finger flag thing is icing on the cake.
It's great.
Thank you so much. I had not even noticed that until someone pointed it out. You know, I think it was Mark, obviously.
Yeah.
One of those, actually, it's almost like he's holding the flag up. Once in a while, you get little lucky extras like that. Also, you might be wondering how I go through so many images. By the way, I shoot about 1,000 images per night, and I actually use the camera's viewfinder, not viewfinder, LCD, to select my keepers. It's just much quicker that way, rather than downloading everything first. It's actually the quickest way I found. If I try downloading the JPEGs, I have to view them and do pics that way. It takes time. So what I do is I just take advantage of how fast the camera's LCD can just flip through these, and I make a note. You know, just take paper and pen and write down the keepers. And when I go to the computer, I simply drag the keepers from my card reader over to the hard drive and burn the CDs, and I'm done. So that's another tip, Martin, I'd just like to add there if you're doing a high-volume shoot like this. Just take advantage of how quickly your LCD can show you what's the keeper and what's not, and just get it done.
Do you find that it's a great tip, Bob, but do you find that you get the focus like that you want? Because sometimes when you look at it on the LCD, you can't tell if the focus is really there. Are you always okay with that?
Well, you know, either I have a very good sharp LCD, and you know, other people not so good and not so sharp, but it works for me. You know, zooming in on these JPEGs, I can see what's in focus.
The thing is that with shooting raw, you're looking at a large thumbnail of the shot, right? So you can't maybe you can't tell so easily.
True, and you know, when you shoot JPEG, there's some in-camera sharpening already, isn't there?
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, so it's just a time thing. You know, I've got other things to get onto, so if this works, I'm just taking advantage of what's there. You know, say it's just one less thing to do on the computer. You know, just to go along with that theme.
Yeah. I was going to say whatever works for you. You know, I myself don't like spending too much time in front of the computer. It just, you know, I like shooting rather than the post processing. But it, you know, it all, whatever's necessary, it's all good. We need to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So, Landon, did you have anything that you wanted to sort of interject there or ask?
Well, the only other thing I was going to interject that wasn't from a technical side, even though all these shots are technically great and all that, but was on the business side of it. Have you been? I assume you've been getting good feedback from your quote unquote bosses, you know, from your work, and that.
Yes.
The question I had was not how many shots you shoot or what your settings are and what that, but how do you divvy up events? How do you pick what photographers are covering what events with the studio?
I get the sense that they call me first because I hear that they're very pleased with what I've done so far, my images. And there's at least one more freelancer who they call if I'm not able to do it. The good thing about it is I can sort of decide based on what my schedule is for that week whether or not I want to take this job to shoot a particular game. And as far as how it's divvied up, it's up to them. You know, they are they have a regular staff there at the studio, and sometimes when they get overwhelmed by either work in the portrait studio and they can't get out to some of these locations and do sports also, then they call us. But I think from what they've seen me do so far, if there's a game that they really need covered, you know, I'm fortunate to say that, you know, they come to me to get it done. And they
like
what
I've done. It's got to be a good feeling.
Yeah, it's a very good feeling. And, you know, it's actually encouraging if I ever want to do this on my own someday. I know of another guy who actually went into business doing this as a sports shooter in his local area. And, he just got all the equipment together, and he knew that there was a market out there. Obviously there is, because many parents and students themselves come up to me and ask me, how much do I charge, and, what am I shooting for? But certainly it's a good feeling to know that if I were to choose to do this on the side as a photo job, then I can definitely do it. But I'd have to dedicate myself to it, which I'm not sort of completely prepared to do right now. I'm just having so much fun right now, I don't want to spoil it.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, Linda.
I was just going to say interject one last thing. Once you turn it into a job, it does kind of change the rules of engagement.
Very true. Very true.
Okay, great. Cool stuff. Thanks very much, Wayne. So shall we move on? I think next we have Landon. You're going to talk about your one a day 366 project.
Yes. I can thank some of the members in the Martin Bailey Photography Forums, and especially Rick for pushing me to do a blog on this project. And I had planned I don't remember when I started thinking about it, probably in the fall. But I thought about it all of 2007. There was a contact that I had on Flickr, Andrew C. Wallace. I have him linked on my blog. That was my main inspiration. But he didn't just take a photo a day and stick it up on his site. He actually made a photo every day and stuck it up on his site. So that to me was something that intrigued me. And I felt that was something I was led to do this year for myself, to get out shooting more, thinking more, looking more, and seeing, opportunities more. And there's lots of days that you go to work and you look out at the sky and you go, boy, I wished I'd taken my camera out 20 minutes ago because it was beautiful. So I try to capture more of those moments now. And now that I have a blog, I'm even more apt to want to do it, because now I've got a place to, quote unquote, publish it. So I share it on Martin Bailey every day, and Flickr, and my blog. And then I link, back and forth, and it's been great so far. I've, started on January 1st, and every day I have a new kind of idea. I don't really go out there with preconceived goals every day, but I have kind of things in the back of my mind, and it helps, with shooting assignments. It helps with ideas. It helps with, visualizations and concepts. And if something doesn't work one day, you can reshoot it the next day. Now, there's not a lot of pressure. And the hardest thing for me in the project is actually picking the favorite. So I did a quick spreadsheet to find out how many shots I've been taking, and I've been averaging 85 photos a day.
Wow.
So that's an average. Some days it's 300, some days it's 6, but the average has been 85. So I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I think so.
I was going to say, I think I shot about 55,000 photos last year, so I'm probably on track. but it's kind of hard, because you take 300 photos, at an event, or you shoot, a portrait session, and you've got to sit down and pick the one that means the most to you, or at least one shot that you want to share as the photo of the day, and it's hard to pick one. So some days it's hard to find one, but that hasn't been too much of an issue yet. The weather has actually been cold and wonderful. So we've had less gray days, more blue skies, more ice, more things to shoot. So it's been kind of fun to make excuses to get out and shoot some of these things. And for me, go ahead and ask the question.
I was just going to say that I think I've only shot 70,000 photos in the last 6 years. you're certainly burning through them there.
Well, I've got 75,000 exposures on the D200 alone since I bought it. So,
oh my gosh!
For me, that's the only way I know how to learn is to shoot, and I don't have one subject matter that I shoot. I shoot lots of things, portraits and weddings and sports and scenery and I don't specialize in any one thing. I make my living, you know, on the side, you know, just as the paying hobby, you know, the professional mm-hmm. enthusiast, I call myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I make the gear purchases are paid for from portraiture and weddings. But the fun stuff that I like doing the most is for my self projects.
Mm. Well, one thing I've been curious about, Landon, is this one photo a day challenge. Is this in addition to, I guess you just answered it, in addition to your other normal photo outings that you would do? And do you see it as a new priority, or are those other things less of a concern now, and you're more focusing on this one photo a day effort?
Well, at first I was thinking, you know, I had all these ideas in my mind of all the steps I was going to have to go through to get this done, but all mm-hmm. it really has become, and when I boil it all down, you know, you have those days where you have a shoot anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm still looking beyond that. I'm saying, well, I have a shoot scheduled, but, you know, there's this other idea I still have I'd like to shoot. Maybe I won't do it that day, maybe I will. But I don't really think about it, you know, the same as I thought I would. I'm really looking at it from the opportunities that come. And that extra half hour that you take when you leave early in the morning to your way to work, and you stop off somewhere and, you know, spend a half hour somewhere to capture an idea. And it may not even be the shot that makes it into the day. But mm-hmm. just the fact that you're out shooting and trying, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's just me, but I think you've been doing this all along, you know? So...
Well, last year I shot almost every day last year.
Yeah.
So in reality, it wasn't that hard of a push for me to say, okay, mm-hmm. I'll shoot every day. But mm-hmm. the condition I set for myself is the photo wasn't just shared once, one photo a day. I actually had to make that photo in that day and share it that day and make it a compelling photo, which was my rules of engagement. I couldn't just take a grab shot or a snapshot of something for my way of thinking about it. I actually had to try to make a photo. And share
that's
a photo,
what I meant,
so.
Landon. That's what I meant. That's what I'm saying, that you've been doing that all along.
I don't feel I have, but I every day I shoot, I feel I have so much to learn. And then the trick for me is not just learning it, but putting it into practice before you forget it. You know.
I know.
Yeah. And not only does he shoot one photo a day, but he shoots. He posts many more than one a day.
Right. Mm.
That's kind of cheating there.
Well, I prefaced it in my blog. I said a minimum of one a day.
There you go. That's good.
So that's the project I set for myself, and so far it's been going fine. And I think if I can make it work at this time of year, when the people don't want to be photographed and the events aren't really scheduled and weddings haven't started. You know, and you don't really have the spring bloom. You don't have the things that draw you outside in good weather. Mm-hmm. It's actually been fun to get out in inclement weather and find, you know, a good light or good color when there isn't supposed to be any. So it mm-hmm. kind of forces you to find things where you didn't expect to find something.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. The blog is looking really nice.
Well, I can thank half of that to you because you pushed me to do one. So I had not planned to do one.
Yeah. Well, good job. Good job. Now you can come over and help me with mine.
There you go.
We should probably mention that the blog, we might mention this later. I'll put a link to Landon's blog in the show notes, but it's basically just blog.landonmichelson.com. So if anyone wants to take a look while we're talking, then, you know, please go ahead.
Yeah, feel free. And I do post a photo taken in that day, and it has to be done between 12:01 a.m. and 11:59 p.m. So that's the challenge I set for myself.
I was going to say, so does that mean that you can't take anything like dead on midnight then, Landon?
I could. But what I do is I post it based on the EXIF data.
So yeah,
as long as it was shot that moment of that last day or the next day, then it's fair game. But you know, I haven't strategically tried that, but certainly I could. It's just to get my frame of mind set so that, you know, when I go into it, I'm just taking it seriously is all.
So did you have something you were going to ask, Wayne?
Yes, Martin. I was just wondering, while we're on the subject, if you wanted to talk about today's photo and what he thought it was compelling for him.
That's a good question, isn't it?
Thank you.
That's another one of those curveballs, Landon.
Hey, I can deal with it. If Wayne has his camera ready, I'll hit it out of the park. How's that? Okay, today I went for a walk along the Wenatchee River, and it's at the mouth of the river. It's just, oh, I don't know, half a mile up from the Columbia River. And the Wenatchee River is pretty frozen right now because it's been 4, 6, 8 degrees here. It's supposed to warm up and snow this weekend, so I'm imagining the ice is going to break up, break away and melt and float away, and that should be interesting to watch. So, but today I went for a walk and just to get out of the rat race for a few minutes from the day job, and it was bright sun. You know, the shadow lines were perfectly perpendicular to the bridges, so I actually intended to use that for on purpose. I usually don't shoot in the middle of the day, but you know, the light's lower in the winter anyway, so it's not high noon even when it's high noon. So I kind of like that contrast range when you can make it work. So today I just went out for a walk, took some ideas, took some shots, and this one was just compelling to me because of the way you've got this ice flow. The water is still flowing underneath the ice, but there's this tree that's laying there, and it's got snow on it, and it's frozen in place, and it's not moving, and the ice is cracking, and you can hear the ice cracking as you're standing there, and you can hear birds flying around, and I just kind of like the way that the tree was pointing, you know, generally upriver and towards the cloud that's in the sky, and I just like the angle of it. I kind of like the perspective, and so to me, that just kind of felt like the moment of the day that was mine.
Yeah, I think the tree adds a lot to the image.
You know, the ice was compelling, but it wasn't really it. You know, it's just a texture.
Yeah.
You know, until you get close, you don't really see it. It's just a mass of something. So I thought the tree embedded in it was just, it just kind of added to the shot.
So did you have to walk out on the ice to take this photograph?
No, there's a footbridge that's about 6 feet wide that takes you right across this section. So I didn't have to do that.
Okay.
If that was Japan, there'd probably be 300 people on that footbridge.
At this time of day, I was the only one out there.
You can almost feel the cold. I love shots that that make you sort of feel the atmosphere, and with that sort of clear blue sky and everything, you can almost feel the cold here. It's nice.
Yeah, I think it warmed up to about 15.
What does it for me is how the tree branches just stuck there in the ice. That's what gives it the cold feeling to me, like frozen solid.
Right.
It's like it's embedded and not moving till spring.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, Landon, do you think I'm probably asking a redundant question here, but do you think you're going to see this through to the end of the year?
You know, we've talked about four season shots and locations. In the forums, we've talked about, going back to locations multiple times throughout the years, and it is something that's occurred to me when I go out there and I see it, you know, every morning, every afternoon, every week, every month, whatever it might be. But the idea has come to mind that, you know, I could revisit these places multiple times and shoot them again and again and again. So I've actually come up with some strategies in the back of my mind of how to do that with camera placements so that you get the exact alignment each time. So I'm playing around with some ideas to see how that works, but for right now, it's just fun just exploring and just seeing what I find. But just getting out really kind of changes the rules of engagement.
Yeah. That's
good. You know, it's kind of like that quote of, I'll stop procrastinating as soon as I get around to it.
I like the one that, what was it? I used to be conceited, but now I'm perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Of course, that's not me. I don't think I'm perfect in any way. I just like the quote. So, does anyone else have any questions for Landon before we move on?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm curious about one thing. Go ahead.
Sure.
I'm curious about one thing. I mean, how strictly do you plan on sticking to this photo a day challenge? Through good and bad. If you need to travel somewhere, You know, do you want to? Do you intend on sticking to this no matter what? I don't mean to bring up, you know, doomsday scenarios here, but whatever goes on in your life, you know, wherever life takes you this year, are you prepared to just keep this commitment? I mean, I admire it. I think it's great. It's almost like a mission for you, and I wish you success with it. But I'm wondering, you know, well, how committed are you to it, and you know, how are you going to take it along no matter what?
Well, I did think about that before I stepped into it, and the plan for me was to follow it through to the end because I felt led to do it, not really knowing where it would take me. But that's kind of like the journey of photography anyway. It's not a destination, it's the journey. And so the only goal I really set for myself was to make a compelling photo every day, whatever came to me that I wanted to shoot. No rules as far as what I have to cover. It doesn't have to be an assignment. It doesn't have to be a person. It doesn't have to be a landscape. It doesn't have to be anything. It just, for me, it has to be compelling for some reason. And I have plans on sharing, you know, behind the scenes, you know, imagery, behind the scenes audio, maybe some video. You know, I'm not promising any of that just because it's not part of the requirements that I set forth, but it is something I'm planning on doing more of. But, you know, having the blog makes me have a place to put it, makes me have a place to put ideas, and I really do plan on following it through every day through the rest of the year. I have wireless broadband internet, a laptop I can take anywhere, so when I'm out of town, there's no excuse that I can't find internet access. If I can make a cell call, I can upload a photo. Okay. So it's, you know, it's, we're all given 24 hours a day, you know, and I'm really trying to make an image in a half an hour, so it's really not, to me, I thought it was going to be this huge commitment. So far, it's like, well, it's not that big of a commitment. You just have to do it.
That's very true.
So some days are harder than others, but.
Okay, I'm telling the truth. I'm struggling.
Yeah, because you're doing this too, right, Rick?
Yeah. I almost hate to say that I thought it was a good idea. And to be 100% honest, I still haven't shot my image for today yet. So,
oh no,
time.
Sure. Yeah.
How far are you from midnight now?
Yeah, 3 hours and 3 minutes left.
Yeah, I got three.
There
hours.
You go.
Okay, another shot of the moon, I guess.
There you go. Something.
Okay, shall we move on? Anyone have anything left to ask Landon? Okay, so Rick, what you're going to talk to us about shooting in manual mode, yeah?
Yeah, I've recently discovered manual mode. I've been it's kind of been the big scary M on top of my camera. I haven't dove into only on occasion. Been really happy with aperture priority, occasionally shutter priority, and some images work, some images don't that way. But that's what I've been doing about 95% of the time. I've recently started to get into off-camera flash, and that's basically manual mode, you know, all the time. And it's really kind of opened up all kinds of possibilities to me that I wasn't aware of before. So, you know, I'm a total amateur at this. I'm trying to learn, but this is really been kind of fun process learning how manual mode goes. And you know, recently I shot an image of my daughter Sierra, and that was done right in the living room here at the house, and completely ignoring what the light meter in the camera was telling me. I kept adjusting and adjusting the manual mode and shutter speeds, and I was really happy with what I came up with. It was really kind of an eye opener for me.
So Rick, is this the one that we're going to link into the show as well?
If you can do that, it'd be great.
Yeah. So if anyone's not listening on an iPod or in iTunes, you'll be able to see the picture of Sierra that Rick's talking about right now.
Yeah, you guys would laugh if you saw the setup photograph for that. It was a sheet, you know, taped to the wall with a Home Depot work light shining, you know, through the sheet to give me that soft light. But
it works great. You know, if it works, there's no laughter. Well, we might laugh, but it would be in good humor. It wouldn't be in ridicule.
No, okay, okay. I think you might get a good chuckle out of it if you saw that. You know, I was happy with how it turned out, and it's, you know, really opened up a lot of possibilities. And I know you and Landon, Martin and Landon, you guys, maybe Wayne as well, you guys shoot manual pretty much exclusively. And that's truly impressive. It's a hurdle that I've just now starting to get over.
Well, you've found that it gives you so much control, right? You know that it, you know, having done it and finding out that it's not really as scary as it seems, it's probably, you know, it's difficult to go back.
Yeah, exactly. I think since I've been shooting manual mode now, I haven't gone back to aperture priority, and I've learned that the light meter may be telling you one thing, but the easiest thing for me is just to kind of chimp it a little bit, you know, take a few shots, see if I like it, make some adjustments, and keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost
Go ahead, Wayne, sorry.
Oh, just a quick point about manual mode and whoever has a fear of it. You know, it's whatever gets you the shot. It's whatever gets you the picture the way you want it to look. And if it works, then if you realize that it's manual mode later on, then you just say, oh, that was manual mode, and you just move on. You know, it's
right.
Whatever, yeah, it's whatever gets you the picture the way it wants, you know, you want it to look, and you know that manual mode is the only one that will give you control of both the aperture and the shutter speed. And so
right.
if you try aperture priority and it's not giving you the look, try time value priority and it's not giving you what you look, then the next option naturally would just be manual mode, where you can control both of those. And then it's almost like, you know, you're so familiar with your camera that's the next step you go to if one mode isn't working. And then after that whole process, then you say, oh, that was manual mode anyway.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I was going to add onto that too real quickly, and just saying whatever mode makes the camera and gear the extension of your brain and your hands is the best mode for you. Whatever mode that gets you to not overthink the settings and let you just control them is great, because once you get to that level, you don't overthink it anymore. It just becomes process.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I found that by shooting in manual, it slows me down. I kind of think it through a little bit. And it just, I don't know, I guess it helps me take a little bit more time to compose a shot and get a lot nicer shot than just firing away and aperture priority and letting the camera do everything for me.
I think that, you know, probably following on from what Wayne and Landon have just said as well, you know, I personally, I think I'm probably in manual mode most of the time, but I think that, you know, I totally agree that it's whatever you need to do. Sometimes the light is going to be changing so quickly, you know, the ambient light is going to be changing so quickly that aperture priority makes more sense. And to me, the main reason that I would go back to aperture mode is that. But because I've been shooting in manual for so long now, it that's, to me, is the default, and it sort of it often feels strange going back to aperture priority. But if, you know, under certain circumstances, that's going to be the only way to get the shot. So, right. You know, I feel awkward in it, but I'll go back there when I need to.
Yeah, it makes sense. If you have changing light conditions and things bouncing around on you, the shutter priority or the aperture priority is the easiest way to go. But manual's really opened up a lot of new area for me.
Yeah. And by the way,
go ahead, Martin. No, sir.
I was going to say, you know, you mentioned earlier, Rick, about, you know, a little bit of chimping. You know, I personally don't think chimping's a bad thing at all. It's like, yeah, looking at every shot. If you take it to the extreme and you look at every shot, then that's probably going to stop you from getting the rest of the shots. That'll reduce your chances of getting something, you know, that you might have done. But I think that, you know, checking the you know, doing a test shot or two, checking the histogram, and, you know, that's all sort of, you know, looking down there, and, you know, so I just think that it's not such a bad thing as people tend to make out, just as long as you don't sort of do it for every shot and start losing other shots from that.
Yeah, so, yeah. I just try to pretend that I'm shooting film, and you know, I only look at it when I feel the need.
So has anybody actually shot film after shooting with digital for a while?
No.
I did that. I forget when it was. It wasn't so long ago, and I was staring at the back of the camera. No, after shots, I was like, I would go along. I'd you know shoot a few images, and then I'd look at the back, and I'm saying, "Where's the LCD?" Or you know, it was like it was strange. You just automatically start to look at it. So, I guess I'm probably chimping more than I like to think.
Yeah, 36 shots. My card's full.
I just wanted to make a quick point also what Landon said before about knowing your equipment well enough so that it just becomes an extension of your thinking, your mind, is exactly the point that you made, Martin, in roundtable number one when you looked up the meaning or some background information about the Canon EOS system.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, not to be you know, manufacturer specific here, but that goes true for any camera that you use. You know, taking a few test shots, like you said, is a process that helps you to become familiar enough with your camera so that it just becomes, you know, something that, you know, you go through the motions until, you know, you get the picture that you want. And however you got there, it's just a means to an end. You know, however you got there, that's inconsequential to the final product. And, I just wanted to make that point that that's something that might help us to get past the fear of any particular load on the camera that we're a little bit jittery about.
I have one other thing to add in that context, and manual mode is different in the respect that you have total control, at least as long as if your camera function allows total control over aperture and shutter together. You have total control over that, and in aperture and shutter priority, you need to use exposure compensation to get total control. And for me, wrapping my brain around manual mode is actually easier. It just fits my logistical processes better than to keep adjusting exposure compensation up and down and think, okay, is it plus this or was I at minus this? Or to me, it's just a matter of, okay, I'm rotating one direction to the other. And it just becomes intrinsic over time, and you don't even think about it anymore. It's just, it's almost organic, you know?
Right.
I was always okay with exposure compensation and from the camera side, but the thing that I don't like about that is that you don't know how things are going to change with your subject, you know. And one of the first things that really started me on manual mode was the red crown cranes in Hokkaido, because when they're white, the subject doesn't change color, but as soon as they fly, that they move from their white snow background to either a dark background of trees or the blue sky, then you know aperture priority with exposure compensation just can't cut it. You know, you blow the bird blows out in moments. So you just have to have more control. And if I know that the only thing that I really care about in that shot that I want to be perfectly exposed is the bird, then you know the background can go dark. I don't care. I want the bird to be perfect.
Exactly.
So you know, it's just getting that extra bit of control and not having to worry about, you know, cause when that bird takes off, you don't have time to mess around with your exposure compensation. You just want to be able to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, you know, I think we're looking at the timer on the recorder here. We're at 67 minutes, so, and you guys will probably want to get to bed soon as well. So shall we move on?
Sure.
Okay. Well, that was great. Good thought-provoking conversation there. So thanks, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
So, no, not at all. So I was going to briefly. So you know, I'm doing the workshop next week. I'm looking forward to, you know, going over there and meeting with the guys. Some of them are members on the forum, and you know, it's just going to be great having known them for a while to actually go over and meet them. But in the preparations, I was made aware of something that's been sort of getting gradually worse over the time, which is it's not really photography related as such. I just wanted to throw it out there, just as a thought, really. In that, you know, I've been noticing that last year in Hokkaido, where we'll be going, especially around the Shiretoko area, there's a peninsula up there that's registered as a UNESCO natural heritage site. And you know, they have the ice flow that comes down from from Siberia, and basically sort of comes right up it comes into the beach, and in this ice flow is locked a lot of brine that actually feeds plankton, and then of course whales and all other kinds of animals and wildlife basically depend on it. The seals raise their young on the ice. And last year, apparently, there was hardly any. It didn't come, and it was basically down to global warming. This year, and this is kind of this is the third curveball that I'm can recognize today. It's here 6 days early. It was on the news this morning. It's a big thing here in Japan when this ice flow sort of comes up onto the beach, and basically the whole sea gets full of it. And it's here like early this year. But definitely, the general trend over the last few years is that this ice is getting less and less. We hear about the poles ice basically starting to become much the poles are shrinking, and it's all got a huge effect on the wildlife and the air, everything, a lot of the places that we covered and that we want to photograph. And it started to raise a few various feelings in me. One is that I basically feel as though we're shooting landscapes and wildlife that's depending on the world that we're destroying. Not each one of us personally, but the human race in general. And I'm thinking that maybe the things that we're shooting right now are not going to be there in a few decades or even a few centuries, but even in a few decades, they're not even going to be there. And that started to sort of get me thinking, and then really the other side of it is that this is actually driving me to a certain extent, because I'm feeling some sense of urgency in the fact that, these things are going away. It's very sad. The photographs are obviously secondary. The world that we live in and the environment is most important. But, it just seems very sad that that's happening. And that's giving me some drive to actually get me out there and make an extra trip to Hokkaido in the year and things like that. So, that's the thing. There's also the obvious side effects of photographing these areas, in that you raise awareness of them. And, I think that photography and the world around us is always going to be linked to a degree. And I was just, really just going through that while I was doing my preparation for the workshop. And I thought I'd bring it up. It's something that's concerning me. And I was wondering if maybe any of you guys also had noticed any effects of global warming on the environments around you, and how you feel about it.
Yeah, I think here in Southern California, I've noticed changes in the weather, whether we have more rain at times when I don't remember it being like that as a kid growing up, or longer, hotter summers. And I think you can contribute that to some of the global warming.
Mm. Is it having an effect on the wildlife or anything, or even just on your photography? Or maybe longer summers are going to help a lot of people as well, but won't do much for the world.
Yeah, I'm sure there are effects on wildlife that I'm not aware of, but I know for the last few Christmases now in a row, we've been wearing shorts during, December, and it'll be 85 degrees here in California, which is kind of odd.
Ah, wow. How about you, Landon? It's colder up your way, right?
I guess seasonably cold here, but it doesn't, usually we get like a week of, 18 degrees Fahrenheit here, but it's been, colder than that, even, minus, in the minus category in some places around here. So, sometimes it's relative, and I think more of what's occurring is just swings that we're not used to. And not necessarily just warmer, but, it's just hotter weather, and the things that you grew up with that you were, consistently seeing aren't, you don't see. I don't see 3 feet of snow here anymore. You have to go up valley quite a ways to see 3 feet of snow. But, you know, I wonder how much of that is cyclic and how much of it is conditional and how much of it will revert back and when. You know, there's definitely indicators and there's all kinds of measurements that can be made. But I think some of it's a lot more acute in other parts of the world than maybe where you have four seasons anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's evidence to show. I mean, obviously we've had ice ages, and there were, you know, we weren't pumping out CO2 at the rate we were in the last ice age. Not that I know of, but you know, there's definitely, the world does go through cycles. You know, but I think that we can also just, you know, I don't know. I think I'm not an expert on this stuff. It just really, to me, seems sad that that things are changing before our very eyes. You know. Have you ever seen anything in your part of the world, Wayne?
Well, that was exactly my point. While you guys were talking, I was jotting down a couple of points that I wanted to mention, and cycles is one of the things on my list here. Certainly, I believe, and this is my hope, Martin, that some of this is in fact cyclical, and these global weather patterns come and go. And one from recent memory you may remember is in the, I think it's the Pacific Ocean, a phenomenon called El Nino.
Yeah.
And it affected the weather in this part of the world. I don't know how much how much or less in certain areas, but you don't hear anything about that phenomenon anymore, but apparently it spurred a lot of destruction and powerful storms and so on. And the warmer Pacific Ocean waters, I think. And you don't hear anything about that anymore. And I have a bit of hope and optimism for how, you know, global weather patterns and life and regeneration or reversion back to previous conditions can happen, as Landon spoke about there, hinted at. And I think that species and life in general had to go through a lot of harsh conditions, and I think things have evolved over time and are able to withstand certain extreme conditions for a reason. You know, it's just part of natural selection, and I think some of the life that's around is tougher than we might think. And hopefully, you know, after a period of you know, suffering through the downturns, they can really come back and sort of blossom to the number that they were before. I realize that everything. Pardon. Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say. I mean, it's okay. I understand that life is more resilient than we often tend to think it is. But it there's degrees to all of it. You know, there's a lot of right now, not just through global warming, but through other devastation, that, you know, the logging and things like that. I'm probably taking this off on a bit of a tangent here, but you know, there are certain species that are obviously, you know, we're seeing more species go extinct, even like every year now than we ever have done in the past. And obviously, once something's extinct, there's no amount of resilience is going to bring it back. Yeah. So, you know, I think that the Japanese cranes that we, you know, we're going to be photographing on the workshop next week are a good example. They were down to, like, I think it was, what was it, about 30 or something a few years ago, maybe 300. There was a 3 in there, if I remember. And they're really coming back in numbers because people have worked to get them their environment back. Again, not really global warming related, but, you know, there are areas where the birds, they go in the winter over at the top of northern China and the border between China and Russia. Mm-hmm. And they're basically building dams left, right, and center. They're, you know, flooding all of the breeding grounds. So the birds are taking a real hit at the moment. And I think that just in general, from a wildlife perspective, we've got to start to change the way we live and the way we sort of butcher in the planet. I'm not a raving environmentalist. I just love the outdoors and the wildlife that I like to photograph. But it's just sad when you get sort of things that you like the ice flows, where, you know, they actually you come into contact with them and you're affected by the fact that that things are changing. It just kind of brought a lot of this to the fore, for me at least.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I wanted to mention was that shorts in at Christmas time is nothing out of the ordinary for me here in Florida. also, Martin, did you know, by the way, we have some red-crowned cranes here as well.
Really?
Around my area. I've been thinking that whenever I drive by, there's a little, Florida is filled with a lot of swamps and lakes. And right around my area here, as I go to work every day, I do see and I think about your podcast every day when I see those red-crowned cranes, except this particular kind, they are gray.
They're not red-crowned cranes. I forget the name of them. I forget the name. There's 15 species of cranes in the world, and I only know a lot about the ones that I've photographed. But there's grey ones. There's white naped cranes. There's all sorts. But if they're not totally white with black tails and that, and then just have a little like a red patch on the top of the head, then if you say that they're gray, then I forget the name. I should look it up. I should know it, but
all right.
Yeah.
But they're at least cousins, then, right?
They're cousins. They're it was funny. I read recently, and I think it was a guy called something Archibald, the head of the Crane Federation, said something very interesting. He said that there's cranes and there's birds. And it's the same difference. It's the same difference as man and apes. He said, "There's like obviously we're very close to our cousins, he sort of made a quote. Well, he was quoted to have said, that the difference between birds and cranes is the same as man and apes, which I thought was pretty interesting. So." Let's see. Well, anybody else have anything that you want to add, or shall we move on?
The only other thing I was going to add, just to make sure that I'm not taking all the thunder, is there's many other people that are doing this one a day project, and Captain Scott in the forums has created a site to list all of the people that are participating that are members in the Martin Bailey site, and then I have. Same people linked in my blog too, if you want to find out who they are. And then there's actually groups on Flickr that do this all year long. And there's one of our members, neverhappened.com, has been doing this, I think, like 900 days now. So
yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So it's not something new. It's just new to me. So thought I'd throw that out there.
So yeah, we should probably put a link to the blog that Captain Scott's put together, because that's pretty impressive the way he's brought that together.
Yeah.
So let's see. Was that your plug then, Landon? Shall we move on to a plug? Do you have anything else that you want to plug before we finish?
Yeah, real quick, for those people that are strobists, or people that like off camera flash, people that like ETL and ITL, playing with rocket wizards, that type of thing. Go and check out www.radiopopper.com and see Radio what they've got.
Oh, yeah, that's new, exciting stuff.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. So, groundbreaking.
I looked into that, Landon. It sounds very interesting. It's like a radio relay of your camera flash's infrared trigger. Really
yes. Cool.
Sounds like good stuff. Did you have anything that you wanted to plug, Wayne?
No, just my MVP gallery for now. I don't have a permanent domain that I can direct people to right now. But from time to time, I'll just update my MVP member gallery with what I've been up to. And people can find me from there. But thanks for looking in.
Okay, great. It's What I'll do, as I said, that we'll be linking to Wayne's photographs in the show notes and that as well. So that'll take you right into his gallery and just go up a level and take a look at his other work. Some great stuff in there.
Thank you.
So, Rick, how about you? Anything to plug?
Well, what I would plug is there's a site that I like to go to called strobus.com, and it deals with off-camera flash, and it's pretty exciting stuff there. Might be something people might be interested in.
Yeah, I'll. It's just. In fact, I was just gonna sort of spell it out, but I think that most people know about that, and it's, yeah, I agree. It's a great site, a great resource.
Yeah.
So for me, I don't really have anything. I've been. I've been basically working on the preparation for the workshop and stuff like that. And then, of course, we threw this round table together pretty quickly over this last week. So I've really not had time to think about anything else. So
I'll plug one for you, Mart.
What's that?
Savingcranes.org.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Have you just looked that up?
Yeah, I've got it up now. I looked at it a couple months ago, and I'd forgotten about it until you were talking about crane species, and then I went to it again. So,
I've got one too. I've got one too for you, Martin.
What's that?
It's the Kyoto Treaty.
Oh yeah, yeah. Japan. That was done over here in Japan, but they're apparently in danger right now, right? They might not be able to make the emissions numbers.
I
think that they've done great, and the Japanese are good, doing a lot for the world in general in the inventions that they're doing, like the hybrid cars and all of this other stuff. They've even got a car that I see advertised on the TV at the moment that runs on water. You know, so
wow.
I don't know anything about it, but it looks pretty cool. If we can run on cars that, you know, if we can all drive around in cars that drink nothing but water and only give out steam, then I think we'd probably end up with more global warming or something like that. But definitely better than burning gasoline and giving out CO2 or whatever it is. So.
Yeah, great. Water is going to be $7 a gallon now.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Yeah,
it's already $2.99 a liter. Now it's going to be $7 a gallon.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I guess we can wrap up. So thanks very much, guys, for, like I say, for your time, especially for Rick, for sort of, you know, getting everything sorted out and overcoming your technical problems in like record time. I think you were worried just minutes before we started recording. So
yeah, I basically sent you an email saying that I didn't think I was going to be able to participate because I couldn't get anything to work, and then magically it worked. So
yeah, you're here. That was good. So really, thanks very much, guys. And I'll, I guess we'll catch up again in the forums soon over at the website, and hopefully get a chance to speak again before too long as well.
Quickly, best wishes.
Great to talk with all of you.
Yep, and quickly to Martin, best wishes with the MVP workshop, and look forward to hearing about it soon.
Great. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. We'll definitely start to get some photos and. Yeah, you'll hear a lot more about it in the coming weeks.
Yeah, it was definitely great to talk to everybody and put voices to names. That's kind of fun. So,
yes.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. It was really good. Thanks a lot, then. See you guys.
Alrighty.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's just jump into it, and don't get too nervous, Rick. I know that it's.
you must have a video camera on me right now.
just pretend you're sitting at coffee with three friends. So
yeah,
exactly.
Are there going to be outtakes, a bonus track?
I don't know. You got to say something. You got to say something lewd and unsavory before we finish to get in there. Well, so nobody want to swear or anything before we finish?
No. I missed having was a cup of coffee sitting right here. That would have been.
Oh no!
I got mine. I got a cookie too.
Brilliant.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.